So there's just a couple of minutes if there are any questions this morning about your practice. Yeah.
The
comment is, without relationship there would be no experience, and to some extent there, the relationship between body and mind, yes, I mean, without the mind there is no experience, but the relationship that we hold in that mind has such variety. The relationship to unpleasant experience, for example, can be aversion, confusion, hatred, problem solving, or it might be compassion, wisdom, balance, curiosity. Vastly different experience between those. And so, yes, there is always that relationship between body and mind, and we need that relationship. But what we're pointing to is understanding that relationship, and the relationship in the mind is where the suffering happens. And so beginning to see that the way we relate to experience through practice, through wisdom and mindfulness, can transform to compassion, kindness, curiosity, interest, wisdom, and away from the reactivity. And so you know, sometimes we do think, like, for instance, we might think that if a loved one is in distress, that if we're not also in distress, that we're not feeling. But a loved one can be in distress, and we can fully feel their suffering without distress ourselves, or without being reactive ourselves, but feel with compassion. And then have a sense of, you know, wanting to support them, wanting to help alleviate their suffering. Vastly different responses to that suffering. So, you know, that's what we're pointing to, that the possibility of transforming the relationship to a more skillful relationship.
So there can be burning in the knee. But as soon as that becomes unpleasant, defined unpleasant, it seems like there is a reaction.
So there are different views about this. You know, there's some commentaries that talk about and there are different impressions of this or different perspectives on this, but there are some commentaries that talk about, you know, again, the mind of the arhant experiences pleasant, unpleasant, neutral with respect to bodily experience. You know, if we cut ourselves if our nerves are functioning properly and we cut ourselves with a knife, there will be unpleasant experience. It's a warning signal to the body to take care of it. And in fact, if we don't have that capacity, that there's a disease called leprosy. What is it? Hansen's disease, I guess they call it now. That is the body that can't have that sensation of pleasant, unpleasant. And the body decays, because there's not the feedback. And so there is an understanding, at least in the commentaries and in the suttas, talking about arhants experiencing unpleasant sensation without reactivity. So my understanding is that the physical experience of the body, I mean, while it is created by the mind, and in fact there is also in brain science, it's understood that the pleasant unpleasant happens in the brain stem. So if there's damage in that area of the brain, we don't feel pleasant unpleasant. So the pleasant unpleasant of the body is kind of got a more, there may not be reactivity if there's unpleasantness. There often is. You know, there often is. As soon as there's unpleasant, it's so closely coupled with not liking that it's really worth looking at. And very often there is this feedback between something we think of as unpleasant, you know, an idea of, oh, there's, you know, there's this tension in the knee. And basically our mind goes into, oh, you know, am I going to be able to walk? Is it going to be a problem? And so then we relate to that tension in the knee through a concept, and the concept is unpleasant, and then the experience of the pain becomes more unpleasant. And actually, when we let go of that concept of what's going to happen to me because of that pain in the knee, we see it's actually just a kind of tension and pulling, and there's not much unpleasantness there. So there definitely is a feedback loop, and we create, the mind creates more unpleasantness, more of an experience of the unpleasantness through reactivity. But my understanding is that there is a kind of an unpleasantness that can be experienced when the mind is completely equanimous. And my understanding is that comes in body experience, because the description of freedom of the mind is no mental pain or grief, so no mental unpleasantness. But that doesn't mean that there wouldn't be, you know, if you fall down, if you cut yourself. The Buddha had a bad back, you know. It said the Buddha experienced pain in the back, and he at times told Ananda to give the Dharma talk because he needed to lie down, you know. Experiencing unpleasant sensation, but presumably without reactivity. So, I mean, look at it in your own experience. And if it feels, you know, the important piece is to notice, is there reactivity?
Well, actually, it seems as if I've experienced the other side of that where, you know, oh, my knee, I'm going to die and all that. And then staying with that knee pain, it becomes
more neutral, yeah.
And I had that with the beeping, with keeping it in awareness. I mean, it can go away, but it also can be where it's fine.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
All of a sudden it's...
It comes back to being unpleasant, yeah. So just notice that. It's great to notice that difference, because you see where the suffering is born, right in that exploration. So... I do have some things to say this morning, because today is the day we shift to a self-directed schedule. So basically, you know, the schedule, we still have the wake-up bell. So Charlie, please continue ringing the wake-up bell. We still have the morning sitting with the practice leader. So, Alfonso, please do the morning sitting and ring the bell so that we all do Sangha service on time. And then we also have this sitting together. So the bell ringer for the Liz, please ring the bell for this sitting. After this sitting, between the end of this sitting and lunch, there is no structured sitting and walking time. So those of you who were practice leaders in the morning, you no longer need to do that. I would like to request a bell ringer for lunch, because traditionally we've been sitting before lunch, and so somebody's rung the bell. So if somebody would be willing to ring the bell, great, Meryl, thank you. And so... I would say yes. Yeah, ring it outside. And especially, I think, particularly important is to come up here and ring the bell right outside the meditation hall. So that because sometimes we can't hear the bells outside here. So I don't think you need to necessarily ring all the way through the building, but, you know, ring the big bells outside and ring in a couple of spots inside. And Chris, would you like her to check with you before doing that, or just ring at 12:15? Okay, so ring a couple minutes before 12:15. Well, typically, I think the bell in the hall has been rung at 12:15. So, okay.
And also, please, people who have morning service jobs,
Yes. Yes, that's true. It's important for you, you know, not having the schedule to keep time. You know, there's the 9:30 period in the kitchen, those of you, and there's the 11 o'clock period in the kitchen. So please remember, keep track of the time. There are clocks around. Yeah. And the 2:30, that's right, the 2:30 time in the hall. I mean, in the kitchen. So please do remember your yogi job times and keep track of the clock. And then, you know, in the afternoon, again, after lunch, we continue practicing. Sit and walk on your own rhythm at 4 o'clock. So Elizabeth, please ring the bell for the Dharma offering. And then Kevin, please ring the bell for dinner. And Rob, please ring the bell for the 9 o'clock sitting. So those are the bell ringers. And we have a new bell ringer schedule, which is posted, so you can see who of you need to ring the bell. So basically the shift to the non-directed schedule or the less structured schedule models the way the retreat center in Burma works. The encouragement here, without having the structured schedule, is to begin to explore and look at what serves you. What's appropriate for you? Is a longer sitting more appropriate for you? Is it time to walk? Perhaps a longer walking works for you. So it's exploring and making decisions about when to sit and when to walk based on what feels appropriate to you. So it's taking responsibility for your own practice. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this, who've not practiced in this way, and for those of you who are newer to practice, you might explore for the first day setting a schedule for yourself. You know, basically you could consider just basically following the schedule that we set. There won't be somebody here to ring the bell to tell you when the time ends. And so one of the explorations might be, you know, you're sitting. This is a suggestion I often make for people. So when you're sitting, exploring the urge to stop sitting and start walking. You know, begin to look at that. You know, because without the bell, that urge is going to be an important part of your practice. And so what I like to suggest for people is when you're sitting there, you come in, you sit for a while, for some period of time, perhaps the mind is just settling. And then at some point the thought arises, oh, I should walk. I'd like to suggest that the first time that thought arises, just notice it. As a thought, just notice, okay, that urge to move has arisen. Sit with the urge. You know, there's often when that thought arises, there's a little bit of a sense of, yeah, I should do that, and oh, I don't want to be sitting here in the hall anymore. So there may be a little bit of impatience arises or a little bit of restlessness arises. Notice that, sit with that. It will pass. It often passes way faster than you would expect. So sit with that, notice that. Let that urge, at some point that urge will arise again a second time. Sit with it, let it pass a second time. And it will arise a third time. The third time it arises, get up and do your walking. But this gives you a little bit of a sense of, I mean, as you watch those urges arise and pass, you see something else happen as the urge to move passes. Sometimes we find that there's a deeper settling that happens in the system, in the mind and body. And then actually we're quite happy to continue sitting. But then the urge will come again. Watch it arise and pass a second time. Another place to explore is Just keeping track, you know, sometimes just noticing, how is the mindfulness? How is the awareness? Kind of noticing the level of energy and mindfulness. And we begin to become attuned to those qualities in our mind. You know, if we're sitting and the energy is really lagging, you know, we may play with that for a while, seeing if we can notice low energy, be with it. But at some point we may realize that the low energy would be, that we would be supported by movement, which would help to raise the energy. And so we can be attuned to the energy level and what would support the energy level of our system. And then it's also helpful in this exploration to check the motivation. You know, when you have that urge to walk, or when you're walking and you think, oh, it's time to go to the hall, what is the motivation? Why? Why is that arising? And you don't have to find an answer, and you don't have to figure it out, but just be open to, you know, what is that? You know, oh, gee, I'm wanting to go sit. What? I don't know why I want to go sit, but that's what's happening. But just be curious about the motivations that are prompting us to sit and walk. We may not be able to directly see them, but sometimes we can. Sometimes we can know what the motivation is. In this shift to the open schedule, aversion is not uncommon. Notice that, you know, aversion is arising. We're creatures of habit. You know, we tend to like structure. We tend to like being told what to do. Recognize that. Recognize the aversion. Or, you know, maybe for you it's finally, you know, I don't have to be hearing all these bells all the time anymore. So noticing the relief about that. Also to recognize in the hall, another place where the aversion can arise is because the schedule is open, you are welcome to come into the hall and sit as long as you wish and leave when you feel it's appropriate for you. And so there will not be the same kind of group stillness in the hall. There will be more movement, more rustling, more sound of people coming and going. I would like to encourage you to move carefully in the hall, to be sensitive to how much sound you are making. And I would like to encourage you to notice hearing if you're sitting, and just that it's beeping, it's wind, it's rustling, it's walking, you know, it's the sound of people settling in. Just exploring hearing as a phenomenon. It's simple. And noticing the relationship. One of the things this supports really is the continuity of practice. There's no barriers anymore, no boundaries, no end of a sitting. There's the exploration around the urge to walk. There's the exploration of standing up to walk. Often with the bell schedule, you know, the bell rings and it's like, okay, sitting's done, okay. And then we go like, we lose mindfulness until we find some place to walk, and then, oh, we remember mindfulness again. This encouragement is really also to encourage the support of continuity. We practice from the moment we wake up. Am I aware? What am I aware of? All the way through brushing our teeth, putting our clothes on, coming to the hall, having breakfast, doing our yogi job, going to our rooms, lying down to rest, brushing our teeth. We practice awareness all day long. continuity is a crucial part of the how the momentum develops in this practice. And so, are there any questions about this schedule, the shift of schedule? Any? Okay. Enjoy your exploration of your motivations.